Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's radio magazine of the performing arts. This week you'll hear about performances of the Verdi Requiem by the San Francisco Choral Society from director Bob Geary and contralto Edith Dowd. Details about the Three Girls Theater Company's fifth annual New Works Festival from producer A.J. Baker. Cabaret singer Carly Ozard is here to talk about her one-woman, one-night-only show at Feinstein's at the Nikko. And you'll hear about Northern California's largest annual star-studded concert and gala benefiting Meals on Wheels San Francisco and the AIDS Legal Referral Panel from producer Ken Henderson. Stay with us. Those thunderous strains of Dies Irae, Dies Illa, Day of Wrath, Day of Mourning, recur several times during the amazing Requiem by Giuseppe Verdi, written to commemorate the deaths of his fellow Italian composer Puccini and the great Italian writer Alessandro Manzoni. The work will be performed in all its glory tomorrow and Saturday evening at Davies Symphony Hall by the venerable San Francisco Choral Society under the direction of Bob Geary. The master of baton and surfboard joins me once again here in studio to talk about the performances. Welcome back, Bob.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here, dripping wet.
Well, soloists for the performance are soprano Hope Briggs, tenor Noah Stewart, the seemingly omnipresent Eugene Bracan-Vianu, and contralto Edith Dowd, who also joins Maestro Geary here this afternoon. A Tennessee native, Edith made her New York City opera debut as Effie in the Ballad of Baby Doe, and subsequently sang many roles with that company. Other operatic stops include Santa Fe Opera, Sacramento Opera, the title role of Carmen with New York's Bel Air Music Festival, as well as with the Pacific Repertory Opera. In Spoleto, she turned the ear of Spoleto Festival founder and composer Giancarlo Menotti, which led the composer to ask her to sing Madame Flora in Menotti's The Medium, which he directed. Scores of other international credits pepper her resume, and after her appearances this weekend with the Choral Society, she'll sing the role of Mary in The Flying Dutchman with Livermore Opera. And in November, she'll be heard as alto soloist in Beethoven's Ninth at Carnegie Hall. Edith, welcome to our airwaves.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Bob, first of all, great memories of our time together back in April performing Onegger's King David. Thank you again for the invitation there as narrator. And I think the recording came out quite beautifully.
Thank you, and I will forevermore think of you as King David.
Oh, yes. those brownie points go a long way, Bob. Thanks very much. Well, tell me about the first time you heard this magnificent work. We can all share our first Verdi Requiem stories.
Huh. First time I heard it. The first time I actually went to a performance of it was probably about 22 years ago when I went to hear the San Francisco Choral Society perform it under its founding director, Adrian Horn. So that, but we listened to lots of recordings prior to that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, early on in your musical career, when did you first hear and like pique your curiosity about it?
Yeah, I would say as an undergraduate, and I do remember still the Foncarion La Scala recording. It's interesting. I have to say that early in my career, I was much more focused on other types of choral music and not big 19th century choral music. So this, I was waiting till I was a little bit more mature to get deeper into that repertoire.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Edith? When did you first hear the Requiem?
Actually, I'm sure I heard it growing up because my parents would always play this. They're both pianists, so I'm sure I heard it through them. But as a low mezzo voice, the Liber Scriptus aria, I heard many times and was interested in singing that, and then delved deeper into the rest of the piece. And then you keep turning pages, and there's more and more mezzo music in it.
Right.
So it's actually really
well. We'll have to have a little sample of that dark, lustrous voice of yours in a minute, Bob. I remember that even earlier for me, even before I heard an orchestral version of it, I was a freshman in high school, and we had a very enlightened band director, Ruth Ann King, who had a band version of the Manzoni Requiem that had themes from it. It's like, wow, what is this music? I hadn't heard orchestrally until probably well after that, but it just really just piqued my ear.
But, you know, I think it was Martin Benvenuto, a local conductor, and I think Shauna Fallahy, a local singer and teacher, both have said this was the work that, you know, just opened their world into sort of choral music and just turned them on and made them want to go the whole distance with the art form.
Well, I mentioned early on that it was as a tribute to Manzoni and to Puccini, and kind of met with some controversy as it being overly operatic when it first came out. But, I mean, heck, it's Verdi. He hadn't been heard from in a couple of years, and then he comes out with this.
I think it's time for us to let go of that whole discussion. It's interesting from a historical point of view, but we are sort of in this post-church age, and ours, at least the community I live in, we're not too worried that it might not be pious enough. In the way it's set, it's gorgeous music. To my mind, it is totally honest about, you know, memorializing those who have gone before. And I just feel like my understanding of it, the more you kind of begin to understand Manzoni and Verdi's mutual admiration, because Manzoni was also seeking unification of Italy, and they seem to be both very, very devoted with love to that, and therefore to each other, even though they didn't meet, I think, until rather late. But I just feel like the way he's composed this piece, it reaches deep from a point of view of just the human experience. I mean, it's so many different emotional landscapes and beautiful melodic moments and harmonic moments. It's just a great masterwork.
Well, there's so many great orchestral and vocal moments, both sublime and explosive.
Yeah.
We could easily take the rest of the hour and just delve into the score in depth. Tell us, set up for us what Verdi does for the Tuba Mirum and what that text conveys.
So this is part of the ancient sequence called the Dies Irae. And in the Requiem, the Dies Irae is probably two-thirds of the entire work, just in terms of the length of it. And it's broken into a number of sections just based on the poetry. And it's called a sequence, and it's got roots deep, deep in Christian history, probably, I should know, but probably in the early centuries of Christianity. At this point, and it's quite wrathful. It's the day of judgment, and hence the dramatic music that you played at the beginning. And here, too, the beginning of the Tuba Mirum, this is when the trumpets from all the lands shall sound to call you to judgment. And Verdi, that was a ticket to ride for Verdi, you know. So in addition to the four trumpets on the stage, there are four trumpets off stage. There's a total of eight trumpets that introduce this section and build to a great, powerful, you know, crescendo climactic moment.
Well, let's hear a little bit of that, courtesy of George Schulte in the Chicago Symphony, and then we'll have more with Bob Geary and Edith. Tuba Mirum. Thank you. amazing taste of the Tuba Mirum from the Verdi Requiem. Wow. That is assembled forces of the Chicago Symphony Chorus and Orchestra under Schulte. You'll be able to hear that Friday and Saturday here in our very own Davies Symphony Hall. The San Francisco Choral Society presents the Requiem Friday and Saturday evening. Bob Geary and Edith Dowd here in studio to talk about those performances. That must be exciting on the podium to be in that position, Bob.
It's thunderous.
Thunderous, yes. Indeed. An important correction. Thank you, attentive listener that just phoned in. I made the mistake twice to say that this was a requiem that was dedicated to Manzoni and to Puccini. Oh, my error. Puccini was still alive and well. It was Rossini. I think we all knew that, but the Enies just got the best of me in a live radio situation. So, Edith Dowd, you have such wonderful dark depths to the contralto voice. I'm wondering if you could give us a little sample of that, of something from the Requiem.
Let's find something low. How's that sound?
And I'll add a little Carnegie Hall to your voice, too.
No, not much trickery. Let's not put too much trickery in there. What about
51 is Recordare, you want that?
The Recordare we're going to go out with shortly, yeah. So either a touch of that or something.
Well, Liebe?
Some of it. I could do some of that.
Okay.
29. It's still early in the day, you know.
We have your dark coffee voice. Doesn't that help? Have morning voice for that?
Well...
Here's a little sample of the wonderful voice of Edith Dowd that'll be performing with the San Francisco Choral Society Friday and Saturday evening.
Liebe scriptus proferetur in quo totum continetur Unde mundus judicetur, unde mundus judicetur.
Bravo. We have a studio full of people just in awe of that beautiful voice. And I added a little bit of the Carnegie Hall stage that you'll be on in November.
I need that help. I'll take it this early in the day, ladies.
Absolutely
and gentlemen.
Beautiful. So, Bob, how did you manage to snag Edith for this and then also adding Hope Briggs, Noah Stewart, and Eugene Brocanvillon?
Right.
Piano.
Well, both Eugene and Hope we've worked with before. Hope actually sang the Verdi with us probably about 12 years ago. And Eugene, we work with whenever we can, whenever there's a big role for a man with a big, big voice. We wanted to reach out and find some other folks to match them, meaning on a more national, international level. And really, I have to say, the best tool these days is the internet. We can find people. Did Joanne Barnes?
Well, I sent you a recording that I made.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
But it was through Joanne, I think.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, so Joanne Barnes, who's locally based but is an agent, connected us up also. And I sometimes will ask Joanne for, you know, her recommendations. But we're thrilled. We're thrilled.
Thank you.
Yes, we're really delighted to be working with Edith for the first time.
And once again, you'll have the 60-piece California Chamber Symphony accompanying. This is Friday and Saturday evening at Davies Symphony Hall. We do have a few pairs of tickets to offer for both Friday and Saturday for people that call 415-841-4134. We've got two pair for Friday evening and a pair for Saturday. That's the Verdi Requiem at Davies Symphony Hall. Soloists Hope Briggs, Edith Dowd, Noah Stewart, and Eugene Brancovianu. Information for the concerts in general are at cityboxoffice.com. And let's go out with the great Janet Baker, again from this George Schulte recording of the Chicago Symphony. We heard some of the wonderful bombast of Verdi that is just incredibly moving. Let's hear now maybe you could tell us a little bit about the Recordare that we're going to hear.
You know, it's coming from, like you said, all this bombastic music. And this is more like a lullaby and a more of a thoughtful, pensive, and pleading aspect of the piece. And it's a tearjerker. Mm. It's like you're singing to a little baby. You know, you have to be so gentle with this after coming from this big operatic aria. Mm-hmm. But it's very moving, and it's a remembrance. So
Edith Dowd will be singing this movement on Friday and Saturday at Davie Symphony Hall. We'll hear Janet Baker next. 415-841-4134 for tickets to this weekend's performances. Bob, Edith, thanks so much for coming in.
Pleasure, David.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Janet Baker and Leontine Price with George Schulte and the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and that excerpt from the Verdi Requiem. You'll hear Edith Dowd and Hope Briggs sing that very aria as part of the San Francisco Choral Society's presentations tomorrow and Saturday evening at Davie Symphony Hall. I'm afraid the tickets have been given away, so if you're calling or on hold, I'm afraid we're plumb out of them, but there's plenty of tickets at the box office, and more information about the concert itself at sfchoral.org. Still to come, you'll be hearing about the star-studded benefit for Meals on Wheels of San Francisco and the AIDS Legal Referral Panel from Ken Henderson. And Carly Ozard will be talking about her solo show at Feinstein's at the Nico, one night only, tonight, believe it or not. And next, well, it's about the Three Girls Theater Company presenting the 5th Annual New Works Festival. 3GT celebrates women and the body politic in 2016. Starting next Monday, the 22nd, through Sunday, the 28th, at Thick House in San Francisco. Joining me to talk about this year's festival is A.J. Baker, who is the producing artistic director of 3GT, as well as a co-founder and resident playwright. It's her artistic vision that guides the company and shapes the festival. This year, she is co-curator and interviewer for the festival's theme night, Women Are the Body Politic. She served as the executive director for all of 3GT's New Works festivals and full productions, overseeing the production of plays at all stages in the development process since 2012. A member of the Dramatists Guild, she is also an award-winning playwright, whose most recent play, Entanglement, will be produced by 3GT this November. Welcome to you, AJ.
Oh, thanks. It's such a pleasure to be here, David.
Sure. Well, a timely topic indeed for 2016, Women and the Body Politic 2016.
Yes, it's not exactly an accident. But I am so excited about this year's festival. I mean, I have to admit, I've been excited about every year's festival. But this one in particular, coming in the middle of Hillary's campaign and coming at a time when more women are getting interested in politics, I think our idea of women in the body politic, which goes both to sort of the politics of body image and women as the body politic in terms of the voting public, couldn't be more right on, and it is a really fun way to do a theater festival.
Mm. Has anything come out of England since the, I imagine the planning process was well before we have a female prime minister of England.
Oh, yeah. Well, the planning process, you know, we were just guessing a year ago, but we were hoping for that we'd see our first women presidential candidate this year, and
voila.
It's right on time.
Indeed.
Right.
Well, each year has had a different theme. You're in your 5th season now. How are those themes created and thought up?
Well, originally when we started the company, we have a couple different goals. One is to just put more work by women on stage, because essentially the cultural bias is that the woman's voice on stage is less interesting or less important than the voice of men. And that's just a perspective that, you know, runs through our culture. And we were looking to solve that problem.
Are you talking culturally America-specific, you think? Or no. In general, worldwide?
I think in general, but we can only bite off America.
one step at a time, baby.
One step at a time. But yeah, no, Western culture in general, the idea that women's voices have just not been heard enough. And in theater, that's been profound. I mean, still at this point, less than 20% of the plays produced by American mainstream theater have been written by women. Hmm. And it's shocking because plenty of plays are being written by women. It's just they're not getting produced.
They're not getting
on stage.
Well, I'm proud to have brought several female playwrights on and talked about their works whenever possible.
Several of whom were members of Three Girls Theater Company.
Right.
Yeah, and the fact that that's what's happening here, too, speaks directly to the problem. I mean, we have a lot of the female playwrights in the Bay Area working with us because there aren't so many places to get your stuff produced. And right from the beginning, we haven't been looking at trying to solve the politics of it or to figure out why it's like this, but just to try to change it. And so the festivals emerge as a way of seeing how we could get more women's voices on stage, more work written by women on stage, and get more audiences who may not have seen work written by women mm-hmm. into the theater. And the first couple years, we did it for a whole month in March. Along with the celebration of, we did a celebration of Women's History Month, which is March every year. But as the time went on, we thought, you know, what we really need to do is make this available to everyone. And when we were running it as a full month festival, we were charging for tickets, we had full productions, and we thought, how can we morph it into something that will be available to audiences that otherwise wouldn't get in, so we can get them in the theater to see what we're doing? And so 3 years ago, we turned it into a one-week festival that's completely free. So everyone is invited, and everybody can see what happens when you put women's work on stage. So the third, fourth, and fifth, we've had specific themes. We had a theme that had to do with women veterans, honoring women veterans in 2014. In 2015, we were looking at risky women. And this year, we're looking at women as a body politic.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's talk us through the week's schedule.
Oh, it's so incredible. So the festival is a culmination of our program during the year. We have a new play development program in our Salon Reading Series. And at the end of the new play development series, we have an independent panel that selects two finalists for the festival. And those finalists get a chance to have two stage readings each at the festival. So very high-level, equity-level productions that are still book in hand, but that are very high level. And those two plays, Slice by Robin Bradford and Country Matters by Lee Brady, both resident playwrights, both of whom had development works done, will be Monday and Tuesday night. And then again on Saturday afternoon, we have a whole afternoon sort of double feature performance. And it's really fun because we also have a champagne reception afterwards for the artists exhibiting in the lobby. We have a talk back. But all of those are big opportunities to see new works as they're being developed. Then we have our theme nights, which are really, this year, very exciting. Wednesday night, we have our, we're calling it sort of the latish night show with Three Girls Theater. It's not really a late night show. It's not very late, but it's got the feeling of being a late night show. We have MC Debbie Durst will be running the show. We have a Three Girls House Band.
Oh, I know that Debbie Durst, at least the former part of that, Will Durst's wife, yes?
That's right, Will Durst's wife, and she has is known for her political satire and commentary, and she'll be sort of kicking off the show. We have a short play that was written by my two co-founders called A Voter Song that's going to be sort of looking at why young women don't vote and encouraging them to change their minds on that. I will be doing an interview with Kimberly Ellis, who is the executive director of California Emerge, which is the California organization that trains Democratic women to run for political office, both on the local and the national level. And then we also have Kimberly McLean and Rachel Hamilton, who will be doing improv with the audience on the theme. So it's going to be quite an incredible night. Thursday night, we have our Repro Rights Night, which is where we're partnering with Reproductive Rights Theater. They're a group that does short plays on specifically focused on women's reproductive rights issues. This year, they're combining it with discussions of our theme as well, and that is also going to be an amazing night. Friday night, we have our Les Rights program, which, once again, it's more than 14, I believe, artists, all LBT writers and performers, including Marjorie Kreitman, Jewel Gomez, Marga Gomez, Tina D'Elia.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's an incredible lineup. We'll also have written and will be performing short plays on this theme. So it's going to be quite an incredible time. And then we wind up on Sunday with our Girl Rights program, which is we're working with young women from Bayview Hunters Point Foundation. And one of my co-founders, Suze Allen, has been working with these young women to write their own stories, also on the theme, and put them up on Sunday afternoon. So it's quite an amazing event.
Wow.
And as I say, I'm very excited about it.
And I imagine,
if you could tell. You might not be able to tell
yeah,
that.
Tone it down a little bit, AJ. You know, it's only so much enthusiasm we can take at 1 o'clock in the afternoon
That's
on a
true.
Thursday. Well, all this is happening at Thick House, which is at 1695 18th Street between Arkansas and DeHaro here in San Francisco, beginning next Monday, running through Sunday. Information at the number three Girls Theater, theaterre.org, threegirlstheater.org. Well, I imagine planning's already well underway for 2017.
It is.
And
it
what's
actually
the theme
is.
Work out for that?
Well, I can't tell you what the theme's going to be. We're still talking about it, but I think it's going to have something to do with the situation for artists in San Francisco and whether or not we're the last theater artists to live here.
Well, indeed, that's a scary prospect.
Yeah.
Well, A.J. Baker, thanks so much for coming in to talk about this. Again, information at threegirlstheater.org.
If I could add just one thing, we are selling out. You know, tickets are free.
No, let's clarify that. You're not selling out. By no means are you selling out.
No, we're not selling. We're filling up the house.
There you go. All right. That's better phraseology.
But I just want to, you know, so you need to reserve online. And I want to warn people that you will see that it's sold out, but we have a waiting list. And as with many free events, not everyone shows up.
Sure.
So it's well worth it to show up a half an hour before the show at 7 o'clock and see if there's room. And if there's, we have room, we'll seat you.
Great. Okay, so threegirlstheater.org. The events are free, but tickets are recommended and are required. So go there and see what you can catch before they sell out the rest of the before they fill out the rest of the shows. Thanks again, AJ.
Thank you, David.
The tune Change from A New Brain by William Finn, author of March of the Falsettos. That's sung by Carly Ozard. From San Francisco to Palm Springs to New York City, Carly has been singing in musical theater and cabaret since the early 2000s. She's a previous winner of the San Francisco Cabaret Competition and continues to create a variety of custom design shows, including Shift Happens, Somebody to Love, my musical tribute to Freddie Mercury, which marked her New York debut in 2011 at Don't Tell Mama, and Middler on the Roof. Carly returns to Puerto Vallarta, I believe, in November with a brand new show, I Just Can't Cope a Cabana. Get it? Get it? And she regularly contributes her talents to such causes as animal rights, marriage equality, and HIV/AIDS awareness. Carly, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
And a one-night-only show. This is the night of your show. You're here live on radio on the very night you're going to be performing up at Weinstein's at the Nikko.
Yep. I'm very excited, and I'm very I'm just really full of joy for today, actually.
Great, great. Well, this the show is called More Shift Happens.
Mm-hmm.
In the introduction, there was the show called Shift Happens. Mm-hmm. So tell me about the initial shift and then how you brought More Shift into the picture.
Okay. Ha. So you know how there's we have our personal goals and ambitions and things that we're trying to get to the next level of whatever we're doing, if you will. All of those things are going along and a whole bunch of different detours take us away, like the computer won't start or your printer breaks or, you know, we're really...
Wi-Fi goes down.
Right. Or you're really hoping you're going to get that job and it just falls through at the last minute, or that apartment, it falls through at the last minute. You know, those things. So those are like big shifts in our lives that happen. And then there's the what I call universal shifts, where like weather disaster or, God forbid, another bad, like, you know, terrorist attack or something that affects our country or our world in ways that we either have a choice to kind of stay in our own little bubble or kind of decide to maybe gain some perspective and try to make a decision to contribute to the solutions instead of ignoring the problems. And so that's what this show is about. It's about where I've been in New York as a performer, but then when bigger things happen, I feel like it's really important to acknowledge the bigger things instead of ignoring them. It helps you focus on being less self-absorbed and paints a bigger picture on, at least you're trying to contribute to the solution. And that's kind of what the show's message is about.
Nice. And you're making your home now in New York?
Home will always be the Castro.
Okay.
For me. But I have an abode in Washington Heights that I very much enjoy now. And I'm trying to make my career landing be more New York than anywhere else. But if a contract comes and takes me away, then that works as well. It's kind of wherever the work is.
Sure, of course.
I'm trying to lay down some real permanent roots in New York City, and it's working.
So your director for this is Christine Zbornik.
Yeah, do you know who she is?
I don't.
Okay.
Tell me about it, Christine.
She's a Broadway performer as well as a national tour performer. She was Madame Morrible in Wicked on tour. She was in John Bacchino's A Cater to Fair on Broadway. She did 9 to 5 in Vegas, Mamma Mia. She's been a professional, consummate performer for most of her life. And I found kind of a spirit animal in her. She's kind of me in a handful of years, and she's somebody I look up to, and she started directing certain cabaret acts along the way and teaching acting, and she was just a really good fit for me, and I love her more than anything.
Nice. And you've got a couple of people involved in the show as well, and some musicians.
This show? Basically, I brought Rick Jensen out, who is an incredible musical director and arranger, piano player. And he used to be one of Nancy Lamott's musical directors in San Francisco. So he is familiar with the city, but he hasn't been back in a really long time. And then I have Terrence Brewer on guitar, and he's just fantastic. He's wonderful. His main background is jazz, but he can play anything. And then my two backup singers are my best friend, Jennifer Haber, who I've known for 20 years, and my friend Francesca Camus from college, who I've known for about 10 years now. And I'm just really, really lucky to have them all on my stage. They're mm-hmm. fabulous.
So what are some of the tunes you're going to be singing tonight then?
So I like to do a combination of like musical theater and contemporary pop. So without giving too much away, I wanted to share. I'm doing one of my favorite songs is "Prisoner in Disguise" that J.D. Souther wrote, and he and Linda Ronstadt sing it together. And I've loved this as a duet for a long time because it really does capture working in nightclub life better than any other song I found. And I had no idea. I just thought, oh, Rick would sound great on this with me. And I found out that he and Nancy Lamott used to sing this together at the Plush Room.
Nice.
When it was around. And so it's just kind of a full circle for him as well. I'm doing Circle of Life from The Lion King, but there's a really specific story that accompanies that I don't want to give away. It's really specific. You will never guess in a million years what it is. I'm doing David Friedman's song called Help Is on the Way. That help is on the way is actually a really pivotal part of the first universal shift that I talk about in my show. And I do that as a duet with my best friend, Jennifer Haber. And that's another full circle because we did that last year at a benefit I produced at 54 Below for HIV and AIDS awareness.
Well, that's going to be a nice segue after our segment here because we have Help is on the Way 22 on the red carpet with Ken Henderson.
I know. I see benefit. Him behind you.
Still to come on Open Air.
Do you know who Allison Moyet is?
I do not.
Okay, did you ever hear the song Situation by Yaz? It's like a dance tune. It's like, oh God, I can't even think of it anymore.
I have to admit that beyond Carole King, I'm a little bit on the fuzzy side.
All right. Okay. Well, don't mess around. You bring me down. Something, move out. It's an 80s dance tune, and she was part of a group in England with one other guy. And they were called Yaz or Yazoo. And she, both. There was a legal problem with them being Yazoo in the States. So I don't even understand. Maybe she can explain it to me one day. But anyway, she has she kind of went off and did her own solo work. And she's got a song called One More Time that I think is fabulous. And to my knowledge, I don't think anyone else has done it except her. So I'm happy to be doing it. I also have... every song I choose is because I had to do it already in public for something. Not everyone, but almost everyone. And so I also do No Good Deed from Wicked, which normally would make me roll my eyes. But the reason behind that song choice is because I lost my voice for 5 years. And And Edith Dowd, who was just here, knows the teacher that put me back together. So that was very crazy. So my teacher, Bill Schumann, and I have been working together to build up my voice for several years now. And No Good Deed happened to be the first theatrical assignment that I got after I fixed my voice. And it was like, okay, I would have liked something a little easier than Stephen Schwartz Wicked because it's very hard.
Yeah, it's a
but it gave
score.
Me perspective of what it might be like to sing that song plus Defying Gravity plus a whole bunch of other really hard stuff 8 shows a week, you know? So that was my first kind of lesson in, okay, well, if you want to be a Broadway singer, you're going to have material like this and it's going to be constant, so you better get used to it. And that was kind of the lesson that No Good Deed taught me. So that's the reason for having it in the show. I don't want to give anything else away.
Right. You'll have to hear and see for yourself a tell-all and sing-all. Now, what's the tell-all aspect of the show tonight?
All right. So basically, that has to do with Circle of Life. And also, I get a lot of people. I'm actually now taking it from the script. Hold on. I get a lot of people asking me all the time if I'm on Broadway. And when I say no, they go, well, why not? And I'm like, okay. That's very nice.
That's always struck me, too, about people that have a degree of success. They've done really well. They have a wonderful book out, and they have a great movie, whatever. And everyone's like, what's next? Like, something has to be next.
Right.
Why can't you just enjoy what you just did or what I'm doing now, you know?
Yeah, and also I think that it's just very sensitive or not sensitive of these people because I feel like, me, as well as many, many, many other actors, singers, dancers, we're all on the cusp of what is the big thing that's going to happen for us, in a sense. So, like, you know, we're on our journey, so please don't push it nicely. And so, basically, the tell-all is kind of, I'm actually taking my cast, oh my God, I'm actually taking my audience through my personal chorus line. I've made it to Final Cut for a few really, really exciting things and didn't get them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when somebody's like, so why aren't you on Broadway? It's like, well, 5 callbacks later, the show closed.
Yeah,
5 callbacks later, I was too tall.
Right.
5 callbacks later.
They wanted the blonde.
Yeah, they wanted the blonde. And so, like, that's why,
yeah,
you know, and
yeah,
it just hasn't happened yet.
Mm.
And so I actually take you through my own personal chorus line experience to educate and to just kind of share the ideas of what goes into, you know, training for a callback for a role you're never going to get.
Hmm. I've been there.
Yeah.
I've been there, believe me. More Shift Happens at Tell All and Sing All tonight. One performance only up at Feinstein's at the Nikko. More information for everything Carly's up to is at CarlyOzard.com. Carly, have a wonderful show tonight.
Thank you.
And we're going to go out with a tune that I think sums things up. I Believe in You.
All right.
I believe that we will be in love eternally. Well, as far as I can see, you will always be the one for me. Oh, yes, you will. I believe in dreams again. I believe that love will never end. And like a river finds the sea, I believe in you and me. I will never leave your side. I will never hurt your pride. When all the chips are down, I will always be around, just to be right where you are. Oh, I love you. I will never leave you out. I will always let you in to places no one has ever been. Deep inside, can't you see? I believe in you and me. Maybe I'm a fool to feel the way I do, but I would play the fool forever just to be with you forever.
I believe in you and me. Carly Ozard's show is tonight, one performance only at Feinstein's at the Nikko. Go to carlyozard.com for more information.
Hello, darlings. Hello, bosoms. Hello, poor people in the back. Let me get a look at you, darlings. Oh. You've aged. Some people that come to my shows, these lovely seniors, they're busting, and they don't have tickets per se. They have prescriptions. They do. There's something interesting about this show. Do you realise one very important thing? I'm making this up as I go along. Well, anyway, Gloria, it's delightful to meet you, and I'm very interested in hearing more about your home. Now, tell me, have you spent a lot of money keeping it up, making it beautiful? You put in a beautiful pool, did you? Obviously, I mean, you spent quite a bit of money on that home, didn't you? Obviously, you both have saved on clothing, so, I mean, it's not a... I mean, no, please!
That's Michael Walters as Dame Edna. Nothing like a dame. And you can hear him along with a whole slew of other folks out for Help is on the Way 22 on the red carpet, Idols and Icons, featuring tributes to Stephen Sondheim, Carole King, David Bowie, Natalie Cole, Prince, and more. It's a benefit put on by the Richmond Ermitt AIDS Foundation, presenting this Sunday only, August 21st, up at the Herbst Theater on Van Ness Avenue with a silent auction that begins at 4, performance from 7:30 to 9:30. Here to talk about the production is Ken Anderson, who is executive director of REAF, the Richmond Ehrman Aid Foundation, event producer for the show. Help is on the way, 22 on the red carpet, and he's co-founder of REAF since 1994. Ken, thanks for coming in and talking about the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Of course, what a lineup. I mean, it's amazing the number of people that you've gotten involved in this show.
Tell us. Thank you. Yeah. Well, it's a little bit something for everyone. We bring in a number of stars from American Idol. We have Broadway stars. We have some of the best of the local crop here. Dame Edna, just as you were playing there. So it's a really fun show that we try to make sure that everybody has something that they're going to be entertained by.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit more about the folks that are going to be involved. We have, I understand that Paula West is going to be singing. Sally Struthers is coming up.
Right, right. Sally's going to be doing a tribute to All in the Family, one of the groundbreaking series of all-time television, and she was the big part of it. It's Archie Bunker's daughter. But it's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm. The cast of Beautiful, which is currently here in San Francisco, the touring Carole King musical, is going to have a little bit of showcase.
Yeah, if you didn't see it on stage there, you can see some of the music from Carole King on our stage. They're going to be doing some medleys. It's going to be a really fun Carole King segment.
And tell us a bit, this is in its 22nd year now. This is benefiting a different cause each year. I know it's always going towards the foundation.
Yeah,
so tell us a little bit about the foundation itself.
Yeah, REAF was founded, like we said, 22 years ago by two moms who lost their only sons to AIDS, Barbara Richmond and Peggy Ehrman with the moms, Doug Ehrman and John Richmond, the sons. And it was founded as a way to honor both their sons and to raise money for the kind of agencies that took care of them before they died. So the first 20 years, we really just were an HIV-AIDS-specific organization. That's we rotated beneficiaries, raising money for. Well, over the years, it's been like over $3 million for 32 different agencies, I believe. Last year, we decided to expand our focus of what we fund to also include hunger programs and programs that serve and support homeless youth.
Great. And some of the honorary committee folks that are involved are some pretty heavy hitters as well.
Yeah, we've got a great committee. Senator Dianne Feinstein's been involved for a number of times. Gavin Newsom, Lieutenant Governor, or soon to be Governor, we hope, has been supporting us since we started. When he was City Supervisor, he was honorary co-chair and continues to support us to today.
How do you limit the number of people that are coming on? I mean, just looking at this amazing list of folks, it must be people wanting to be a part of this and then having to say, sorry, not this year.
Yeah, usually when people come out and do their show, they have a great time, we treat them well, and they want to come back. Sometimes they're busy when we go back and ask, sometimes not. But it's fun. When we bring people out from New York or wherever, they're treated well. We have airline sponsorships most of the time, hotels donate. So it's not a big cost factor when we bring people out from other places.
It's a big help, I'm sure. This year's show is directed by David Galligan and musical direction by Michael Orlin from American Idol.
Right, yeah. Michael's been a musical director for us a number of times. Now that Idol's off, he has more time to do these sort of things. But he's a great guy, an amazing musical director, and really helps us bring in some of the former American Idol stars, as we have four of them this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, remaining tickets are at cityboxoffice.com. Help is on the way, 22 on the red carpet. Idols and Icons, with tributes to a whole bunch of folks and an amazing roster of performers. The performance itself is at 7:30. A silent auction begins at 4. It's at the Herbst Theater this Sunday, August 21st. The Herbst is at 401 Van Ness Avenue in San Francisco. Ken, thanks for sharing a little bit of information about all this. And you are truly a friend. You've got a friend in us. We've got a friend in you. And I mentioned that Carole King tribute is going to be part of this lineup. Let's hear Carole herself singing You've Got a Friend.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
When you're down and troubled, and you need some love and care, and nothing tonight. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, got a friend. If the sky above you grows dark and full of clouds, and that old north wind begins to blow,
King, and You've Got a Friend. She wrote that tune. The cast of Beautiful, the touring cast of Carole King the musical, is going to be part of Help is on the Way 22 on the red carpet, Idols and Icons. Sunday evening only at 4 o'clock, a silent auction, a show that starts from 7:30 to 9:30. That's going to do it for Open Air for this Thursday, August 18th, a happy birthday to my brother Jim in Connecticut, Jim LaTulipe, a couple years older than I am and still going strong. And a shout out to Nick and Cassie Hill, who visited from Connecticut this past week here. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing Open Air. If you've got a segment suggestion, by all means, give me a shout. David@KALW.org. Today's show, as well as others for the past several years, are archived at our website, KALW.org. Thanks for listening.